They started buying seed companies, and then there became the discipline of agricultural biotechnology, which would make those seed companies worth some multiple of
right.
what he had paid for them.
Right.
So he became an ag biotech entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
When we started getting into things, this was probably 82. I decided we needed a sophisticated patent consult that probably wasn't available in Minneapolis. Mm. And my friends in New York took me to a guy by the name of Leslie Mizra.
Oh, he was like the dean.
And I went and interviewed him, and I came away feeling very negatively. I had separated from my wife in New York, and I had sought the services of a New York divorce lawyer, and I got to a very slick guy who had an egg timer on his desk. That was a big turnoff. And when I met Leslie, he reminded me of that divorce lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, Shortly after, Leslie was on a program at MIT the day that Genentech went public. And I heard Leslie speak, and I said, shit, I made a mistake. And I called him up, and he said, maybe you're too late. A guy by the name of David Padwell has engaged me, and I can't take on you on unless David agrees to it. So David agreed to it.
Oh.
And so I was his second.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And we had a relationship basically
mm-hmm.
until his death.
Mm-hmm.
When we started another company, he continued as
BioSeeds. Before we get to BioSeeds, just I want to ask you, you get forced out of molecular genetics. How did
we don't know. We don't know what the boardroom intrigue was.
Yeah.
But it involved American Cyanamid and Martin Marietta.
Yeah.
Who each of them had a board seat. And I wasn't on a particularly good relationship with the American Cyanamid guy. We never became friendly.
Yeah.
And by that time, the relationship with Tony Ferris and myself was cooling.
Uh-huh.
And the number two and number three guys at Molecular Genetics, somehow or other, created enough intrigue to cost me my job.
Mm-hmm. So there are sort of two issues there. I mean, just personally, you know, how having that stuff go on and getting forced out, how did that affect you personally? And then secondly, there's the issue of, well, they think the company should be in human pharmaceuticals rather than, I mean, it's a complete about face. Did you think that was a mistake at the time, or did you think that maybe that was a good way to go?
I didn't have to think about that. It wasn't, I was gone.
Yeah.
They bought back a portion of my stock. I still had a lot of shares. Stock was sinking. I met my successor. I talked to him occasionally. The guy who followed him and I became kind of friendly, but it wasn't me to second guess them. Now, I left them with a great deal of cash, about $40 million in cash in the bank, and they sold off assets for probably another $12 to $15 million.
These are the research.
They animal health technology, and the plant genetics stuff. They sold it all. I had started a subsidiary in the Netherlands. That should be another subject to talk about. Sorry, I have so much to talk about.
Great.
But we started a company there called Moja as a subsidiary. I raised about $5 million let's say the summer of 1984 onto 85.
But should we have a second conversation maybe about this?
Okay. Yes.
About after we've talked about molecular genetics, maybe we do the second
yes.
half.
You talk about Mogen and bioseeds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're an important part of the story. The bioseed business model was a great idea, wiped out by the summer drought of 1988. We were highly leveraged to begin with, and we lost our whole seed crop in the field of central Illinois that summer. But we had a corn breeding program that is now the mainstay of the specialty white dry milling, corn milling industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideas that would have fed into that were great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'd like to hear how that came together, but one thing that strikes me about this is that you're now about 1,000 miles away from dermatology and virology. You're into, you know, it's just interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
When I first got involved with business by accident, I became the assistant and then secretary treasurer of the American Academy of Dermatology. And that was at the same time when I was learning how to run a company. And the president in the Dermatology Society is more or less of a figurehead, and the secretary treasurer runs the organization with a lay director in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were really lacking, that I knew from my early business days, was any kind of fiscal discipline. So what I did during my tenure is I introduced some fiscal discipline to the society, which has become enormously rich, fiscally responsible. Now, they would have gotten there without me. It's just inevitable. They learned that, you know, a 501c3 has a for-profit subsidiary, and they would sell education programs, so forth. And that became a major funding source for the organization. But I taught them that they had to have an audit committee, they had to meet twice a year, blah, blah, blah. I'm a kind of busy entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And then in Netherlands, I did the same thing. And just a one-minute glimpse of the Netherlands, I went there, and I got all the Dutch seed companies into the room together, and I told them, we're going to start a plant molecular biology company here, research company, and they said, go away. They weren't too happy.
Uh-huh.
But the Dutch government gave us about $5 million in a couple of different forms. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
Because that's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to molecular genetics. We were not just vaccines, we were also cloning bovine growth hormone because we thought BST would be a product worth having.
Mm-hmm.
But we were having trouble with the cloning procedure.
Is it a tough molecule? Is it big?
I don't know what the technical problems were. And I probably never knew. And I thought, then I got wind of the fact that a Dutch scientist there, whose name is Herman de Boer, wanted to leave Genentech. And I thought, well, so I gave Herman a call, and Herman came out to interview, but said, no, I got to do my own thing. And he went back to the Netherlands and started a company called Pharma. And they...
Oh, is it Pharma or Farming?
Farming.
Farming, yeah.
And I don't know if that was the original name, but they made a transgenic cow. It was called Herman.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a remarkable bench scientist.
They did a lot of great stuff. They made one of Genzyme's drugs there. Or which disease?
What did they clone in their first cow? Ferritin or something.
Yeah, but they had transgenic rabbits, and they were purifying from the milk of these rabbits an enzyme replacement for, I can't think of the disease now, but you know, enzyme deficiency, one of these orphan diseases, and it became a...
Well, they were good guys. Herman didn't have a leadership position there for a long time. Other people have come in to try to make a business out of that, not very successfully over the years. But I got a call shortly from Bob Swanson.
After raiding.
I didn't raid him. He didn't take my job.
Yeah.
Bob said, would you mind, when are you going to be in San Francisco next? I'm going to be in San Francisco next week. And he said, well, I would like you to come out for lunch. And he took me to lunch in the dining room. I hadn't been there in a couple of years, and now there's zillions of people around. I'd been there. I had seen their first fermentation facility and so on. I'd been there a few times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there. So he sat me down in the lunchroom, and he said, do you see value in the relationship between you and me? Absolutely, I said. I can't think of a better relationship between you and me, Bob. And he said, great, then you'll keep your hands off of my employee. Because if I hear that you've talked to a second employee, you and I are never talking again.
Mm-hmm.
I never talked to another employee.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting.
I was also a member of the first group that put the trade association together with IBA, which Swanson didn't participate in.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it did eventually, but not at the beginning.
First year.
Yeah.
So I was on the board that first year. I hired Harvey, whatever his name was. It was the first director.
Yeah.
I was on...
Harvey Price.
I was on that committee. And that's where I got probably more friendly with George Rathman, who was Gabe Schmergo.
Uh-huh. And Les Glick.
What's happened to Les Glick?
He's in Florida. I went down there and talked to him. He's doing... Well, he's... You know,
good.
I think he's doing consulting or something.
And Gabe?
Gabe is retired. He's in Boston. And, he's doing well.
Genetics Institute was a very, you know, as a scientist, that was really one of the... what was the name of the founding scientist?
There was Mark Potashny and Tom Maniatis. Those
Mark
were the two guys.
Mark was from South Minneapolis.
Oh,
the neighborhood we just
is that right?
Driven through. We can drive by his house.
Okay.
Right between here and your hotel.
Yeah, okay, good.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't know him then.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I don't think I've ever met him. I probably talked to him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a nice... So we recruited, we filled molecular genetics up to the point where there were 34 PhD scientists and about 90 people in the laboratory. And they were terrific. We took young people freshly out of postdoctoral fellowships or shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
The first research director we hired was from was Claude Nash from Philadelphia, who later became co-founder of, I can't think of the name of the company, but
well, we can look it up, yeah.
Immune.
There have been a lot of immune tech, yeah.
Yeah.
Immunogen, Immunex.
Virimmune?
Could be. I'll look it up. Claude Nash. Yeah.
Claude Nash. And then the second research director was Lynn Enquist. Claude didn't last very long. Came from a pharmaceutical company, SmithKline.
Did you specifically want to get somebody from industry?
Yeah. But the young scientist didn't relate to the industry scientist well.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't last long. And then I brought in Lynn Enquist from the NIH. And Lynn is the head of molecular biology at Princeton. And that was good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Keesian was an advisor to us, and that was sort of my entree into Cold Spring Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hung around with...
I'm fine.
I think we're kind of out of here.
Okay. Well, I've got the good news here whenever you're ready, John.
Okay, thanks.
Hung around with Big Jim for a few years.
With who?
Jim Watson.
Oh, yeah.
But you should plug in. There's some people that you should plug into. Like Doug Rogers was active at Cold Spring Harbor. Lived on Long Island. He raised a lot of money for Cold Spring Harbor, for Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an important connection to me. When at BioSeeds, I supported a fellow at Cold Spring Harbor in the plant group. You know, the young people who work for Barbara McClintock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Watson was a... Watson knew my my papillomavirus work. He had some connections. There's a guy by the name of Matty Sharp who was on the board at Cold Spring Harbor.
He's a monoclonal antibody guy?
I don't know what he is, but he's a molecular immunologist, molecular biologist from Einstein.
Yeah.
And he vouched for me and kind of got me in the door at Cold Spring Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things were like the frosting on a career for a country doctor were very nice.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an exciting time. Right?
Yeah.
And really important stuff happened.
Yeah.
So... No, it's great to hear all these connections. It's a big part of the story. Because it really, I have to give credit to the financial people that they did a good job of finding out who was really good with the science. And
yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't real evident. There were other aspects to it. I had a terrific New York City public relations guy. It was like a one-man boutique. But he'd call you and he'd say, I want you to be at lunch next Wednesday at Cote Basque. We're having lunch with the science editor of Business Week magazine. Then an article 3 months later would come out and there you would be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so forth.
Yeah.
The Wall Street Journal science guy. I met him through... And these people would quote you. So when they were doing something else, it was before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
They would call you up and say, you know, what do you think about so-and-so? I just met so-and-so last week. What do you think about their business?
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd read your name in Forbes magazine,
right,
the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great publicity. I got a call once from a Japanese holding company And they said, we want to come to Minneapolis to meet you. How do you want to meet me? And I said, well, we read your name in the New York Times. We read the name Molecular Genetics in the New York Times. I said, so what? And they said, well, you're going to be successful. You know, it was like January of 1982. I said, how do you know that? Well, they said, they only named three companies, and you were one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that kind of failed on itself, you're right.
Yeah.
And through networking.
Yeah.
And I stayed with that, you know, with my current relationship.
Sure.
Over the past 10 years, 7, 8 years, I've become very friendly with a scientist at the University of Pennsylvania Medical School. And we've done a couple things together, including my current company.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to hear about, you know, what your BioSeeds and after. I could come back sometime. Are you in touch with Tony Ferris at all? Do you have contact with him?
Yeah. A little bit.
A little bit?
We actually, there's a guy that you should talk to.
Okay.
You can do that on the phone. He's retired from Monsanto. His name is Bill William Pilichinsky. I'll send you contact information.
Okay.
Some of these people.
Yeah.
The important thing is Bill did the papillomavirus stuff at Molecular Genetics. He on my behalf. He went to the Netherlands for a year to set up Mogen, came back. Eventually, when Molecular Genetics broke up, he went to Monsanto and was there for a number of years. He went to Northrop King here in town first.
So he was working on the plant genetics stuff too?
In those years he was an animal guy.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think he ever worked in the lab, but he became an administrator at Northrop King. He may have had a research management job at Northrop King, which became Syngenta, and he wound up actually doing international patent work at Monsanto. But he's a testament. I always said every idea I ever had wound up on the exit, wound up being owned by Monsanto.
Yeah, well, that's true for a lot of molecular biology. And
yeah.
Molecular
and
biology.
DuPont. And some of our people went to DuPont.
Mm-hmm. Right.